This is a Pinball News production.
Hello. So I was here about 4 years ago with the technology just coming out with the idea that you could take a commercial inkjet printer, sand a playfield clear, and then use the inkjet printer to put all the art back onto the playfield. So when I first came here back in 2007, I was fortunate enough that the first two playfields actually went through the process perfectly. And then after I got home, the next 2 years I had numerous clear coating failures with the UV ink. So it took me almost 2 years to finally figure out through the blaming game that the guys doing the clear coating were blaming me for either contaminated surfaces or different things going on. And what was actually happening was that you can't clear coat UV ink too quickly. So what I've realized over the years is if you can still smell the UV ink, you should give it about 1 to 2 weeks before starting the clear coating process. So I've been talking with Stern. They've had similar issues because the contractors want to rush everything. So just because the manufacturers of UV printers say it's 99% dry or 99% cured when it rolls out of the machine with the UV lights drying it, it's actually still, it's dry to the touch, but it's still off-gassing. So I'll just start the process. Initially, the art that I had was space shuttles and sorcerers. So I committed crazily that when I first started this, I said, I opened it up to the community. I said, if you want to take a chance, you can send me up a play field and I'll restore it free or for $300. So over the 4 years, I'm finally, these are the last ones that were sent in. When I initially thought about this idea, I said, I should be able to restore playfields for about $300. Well, I've come to the conclusion that $300 is just the start for my contractors, let alone the many hours of time and materials for myself to do playfields. So starting December 1st, I will be offering a restoration service at $600 US, plus any Canadian tax, which is about 7%, and shipping back to USA Canada, which is about $50. So the person who would send me up a play field would strip everything off top and bottom, including the staples, and then they would just send it up US Postal Service or Canada Post to me, and then it should go through a restoration process, and the timeline should be now 60 to 90 days, and not the 2 to 4 years that people keep complaining on RGP and other places. So, like I say, the results are there. The technology that I've been using from the get-go was a color span UV printer 9840, which Hewlett-Packard bought into because it was really cutting-edge technology back over 4 years ago. Well, now the technology has moved so far advanced that now most commercial UV printers will actually print white first, then you can come back and print the CMYK, and certain models will actually do a layer of clear coat after the CMYK. So the board goes in and just about everything can be done to it. Going back in time, when I first started this out, I got nothing but trash from people in the industry saying, silk screening is the only way to go. Well, after about a year and a half, my buddy in Australia, Wayne Gillard, went out and started inkjetting all kinds of different products. And that's the way the industry is slowly revolving, is going towards new technology and getting away from silk screening. Silk screening is still the most cost-effective way to go if you're producing hundreds of or thousands of products. But the changes in the industry now is like production runs could be hundreds of units and not the thousands of units in the old days. So I'll just briefly go through the process. I have a very limited art team. For some reason, I don't know if people think I'm cheap. I'm not. I give my art team usually at least two restored play fields or back glasses, a bunch of stuff. So my other buddies in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, Classic Playfield Reproductions, they have a huge art team that's helping out this hobby producing many products. I figure those guys probably are supplying probably 60 to 80% of the aftermarket products, whether it be brand new play fields, plastic sets, or back glasses for the hobbyist market. To restore your pinball machines back to a very nice condition. So starting this fall, I've got Stargazer. People should be seeing the first two Stargazer results probably by the end of November. Early next year, I'll be restoring Sea Witch playfields. My one-man art team for Stern is Mike Hulse at the back. He was on board from the get-go. The new developments this year, I'm placing a glass order finally through the Canadian manufacturer Temper Glass. So come the new year, I will be running nine ball and see which back glasses doing a silk screening method. I purchased screens probably about 2 years ago, but my main focus was on trying to get through the backlog of play fields. The last 3 years have been pretty bad on a family note for myself. I had a mother with two types of cancer for 2 years. She passed away a year ago. I've had some health problems of my own. So I just wanted to get through the play fields. I did do about 30 plus Sea Witch back glasses using films. What I've been doing is the last couple years I've been testing doing UV ink on back glasses. There was a video showing David Fix with his Paragon art going through the color span. The color span's very good at laying down just the CMY colors on a piece of glass. The problem that I ran into is that the durability of UV ink on glass just isn't there. It's either the process I'm following isn't quite right, or it's like something that we're gonna have to develop with different inks or different techniques. So I did a Flash Gordon test, and I had it UV inked white layers to build up the layers so you could see the art properly. But what happened is, no matter what the curing time is, you can take your fingernail and scratch the ink right off the glass. So that like $2,000 to $3,000 test is just down the drain. So I came to the realization, either the technique is gonna have to change to stabilize the UV ink on glass, or go back to the traditional proven method of actually silk screening glasses and doing it that way, which seems to be durable. That's the way the industry is doing it. That's the way Classic Playfield Reproductions making glasses, and the other vendors that are still doing back glasses are still using the silk screen method. So I'm gonna explain the process of the play fields. I freely give out this information to anyone around the world. I'm surprised that nobody has really taken the ball and run with it around the world, because if you can find a ready printer that's willing to take the risk to print the wood, you could restore any play field that's out there if somebody takes the time to do the art package. When I first got into it, there was questions about licensing and a whole bunch of stuff. What I've come to realize is that, like Williams Valley, it's a restoration service, so they pretty well say nothing. It's allowed. Gottlieb, under Bob Fezian, who owns the licensing rights, he takes a harder stand. He says, Gottlieb will not allow that. It has to be a brand new licensed product through them. So I'm staying away from the Gottlieb stuff. The old Stern is pretty well open. So those play fields are the ones I'll probably stay with for restoring. The play fields are sent in, so the owner will strip everything top and bottom, including the staples, send it in to me. What I do is I take the play fields and I sand them down to bare wood. And I'll inspect the light lenses to make sure they're secure, so I'll do a finger test, push on them. If they're loose, they'll get some heat removed and reinserted. If they're cupped, if at all possible, if I can find brand new light lenses, I will glue in brand new light lenses. Mike Hulse's Stargazer, he had the star rollovers at the bottom of the playfield. One had been broken, so I obtained two brand new red ones from Classic Playfield Reproductions, and I glued those in, sanded it down. So after the sanding process, what happens is I give it two coats of Varathane water-based high gloss or gloss. So it's a readily available product in Canada. I don't know if Varathane is readily available at your big box stores in the US. I would think so. But I go in, and if I see one of them has a sale for 25% off, I'll buy like half a dozen gallons of the stuff. Yeah, Varathane seems to be very durable over years, so don't worry about it. I've had some cans for like a couple of years, and the product stays pretty stable. So the Varathane water-based gloss is what I use. I use my own gun to spray it, an overhead gun. So that's what will be going through the process. So just to give you an idea of my process, after sanding, I do clear coating. And anytime I clear coat through my process, it's only one coat per day. So I'll start off clear coating the bare play fields. So they get two coats of Varathane. The next thing I will do is take a masking material, which I get cut on a cutter plotter. It's called Oracal 810 Mask. It's a special gray mask used predominantly like for auto graphics or something with curved surfaces or whatever. But I find it's a very good film. It's like a photo gray in color, so you can see it when you apply it. If you screw up, you can just lift it up with an X-Acto knife and reposition it. And you can do that many, many times. So when I lay the masking over the light lenses, the wood areas like switch lanes, and mask off like the bottom where you see on the play fields underneath the apron, I do that, and then I'll use Sherwin-Williams Auto Acrylic White. Just a rattle can. I'll rattle can it across. My process of spraying, right now I'm using a Stanley, I think it's called Fat Max sprayer, HVLVP sprayer. And what I do is my pattern in my tiny home booth at home is I'll go across the play field lengthwise, I'll go across the play field, I'll come back, do it lengthwise again, and then across the play field. So my technique is like slow bands of spray to cover the whole play field. The rattle can is the same way. So the rattle can of high gloss white, I buy it because by the case I can go to the auto wholesaler and it's like $3.50 a can. One can will do me two play fields. So it's just a throwaway item. After I mask it, the next day I can go in there with an X-Acto knife and I just reach underneath the film and I can just lift up all the masking material off my light lenses and wood areas. So once that's done, the next couple of days I'll spray another two coats of Varathane. I never sand between any of my layers of Varathane or my white. I don't want to wreck the surface. The first two before the white masking, everything is pretty level. So after the two coats of Varathane over white masking, so now I've got a white base, I take that play field, and then what I have to do is screw a half inch MDF to the bottom of the play field before it gets inked. Any pinball play field, whether the wood is brand new or in my case 25 years old, the wood is always either racked or warped. You can see it on the play fields here. Some of them are a little heaved up or racked or whatever. So out of the first 20 play fields, we only had one, which was almost a 2-inch difference. If you laid the play field on a flat surface, you could go 2 inches under a corner. That was the only play field that the printer rejected. He said, there's no way in hell it'll go through the printer. Just so you know, these commercial inkjet printers, the heads are worth about $50,000. So if you smash a head into a play field or a piece of glass, you're in for a lot of money. So the printers are very cautious about that. So The first little batch of play fields I got, it was really hard to get the alignment just perfect. Every single play field that comes in is slightly different. The space shuttle play fields that were here done was Edwards' file. His play field actually has a big arrow that everybody will see, and it's off by, I would say, about 3/8 to 1/2 inch. And every single reprint job I do, that's the biggest mistake you'll see. When the guys are making brand new play fields, they can test everything. They're using a CNC machine, so every piece of wood is exactly machined the same way. So they can correct their file and adjust it, so when they go for the screening process, everything is bang on. My process, I pretty well have to rely on the human element to align it up as best as possible. Just to give you an idea, one time I had 6 sourcers into a clear coating shop. They looked at all 6 sourcers and they were all different for light lens alignment. So wherever they were, Williams was making the play fields in the past, they could have had jigs or stuff and they just didn't care. It was like mass production and you just got a finished play field. So getting back to mine, I get the play fields back from my printer. If the artwork is pretty nice, so there's no like real major issues or alignment stuff, I take it off the half-inch MDF and I allow it to cure at least 1 to 2 weeks. After that time, when I don't smell any UV ink, I'll take it back into the spray booth and I'll spray a further 4 layers of Varathane clear on it. I'll give that probably another week after that, and then they go out for finished clear coating. So the finished result before the finished clear coat from the same guy who's doing classic play field reproduction play fields that you see, all the brand new play fields the last year, it's the same guy using the same equipment, using the same OmniClear. So when it goes out to him, the surface looks almost like little bumps or orange peel all over the surface, because I do absolutely no sanding in my process after they're initially sanded. So he'll take the play fields, give them a very light sanding, probably at 1600 grit. It'll level off the surface a bit, and then he'll give it 2 full clear coats before he sands, and then he'll do 1 final clear coat on top of that. So when they come back, this is the result up here that you'll see. Initially, there was talk everywhere about the black isn't as black, and it was a bunch of bullshit. Black is black. I don't know what people are talking about. There's different tones of black. Maybe you can get slightly different darker black silk screening because the product, you can make it super dark black. I don't know. But it's a CMYK process, and the black looks good to me. So that's about it for play fields. Like I say, I encourage anyone out there with the talent to do artwork to contact me. If you've got, whether it be electromechanical play field, early solid state, I'll probably be getting into more modern games. I think I have access to Attack from Mars for the artwork. So I might go up the next level and start looking at more modern pins to re-ink. I believe this process is far superior. You know, people who have the technique and the skill to touch up play fields, that's the way to go cost-wise if you can do it. Back home, there's 6 people that have the artistic talent to actually touch up play fields and have a good result. I've got one customer that probably has the skill set of myself, and it looks like a 3-year-old trying to touch up a play field. So that's, you know, I'd rather have bare wood than try to touch it up and have no skill set at all. So getting back to the art, like I say, I do have some bally art, but like I'll probably be doing just very few play fields, which are probably owned by myself or a few others, just to prove the results. I should have the high-speed artwork, 8-Ball Deluxe, a Xenon, and Evel Knievel. So a few of those will be run. But like anything that's freely available out there as NOS or is being run in the near future, I will probably stay away from. Because like I always say, if you can get a brand new play field where it's, whether it's NOS or a brand new product from Classic Playfields or one of the other vendors, that should be where you should be going. Cost-wise, it's about the same. Like I say, even at $600, there's very little money in it. It's a hobby to me, but I'm not a slave. There's the guys from Classic Playfields, they just push out the product. That's fine. But like, I do have a life. I do have a 6 day a week day job. So my time is precious to me. I'll help out the industry, help out the hobby the best I can. But like, I'm not gonna be a major producer of product. I've always said in the past, if I can get 0.5% of what the guys at Classic Playfields do as production, that's fine by me. So I'll open the floor to questions about the process or anything else you got. Yeah, the question was, do I do anything else to the play field when I'm sanding it? I will look for a nick. So like most of the play fields that are coming back, if there's like an issue around a post where I see it where it's like the wood is like removed or pulled out or whatever, I will restore it with epoxy. So most people that are getting the play fields in, like most of the play fields, like above the return lanes, there would have been maybe 3 adjustment screw points for the slingshots or whatever. If it's wide open, I usually just seal them over. The owner's gonna have to figure out where the placement is with this plastic and just drill through the clear and restart the hole. So anything obvious like switch lanes, a lot of times some of the games, like the older games, there's like a little notch out of each end. I'll try and fix those up as best I can.
So if I understand correctly, the process is first coat is paraffin, then white, then paraffin, and then put on top of paraffin, is that right?
That is correct. So what it is in total 8 coats of varathane water-based gloss. So it's in the initial days, I used to buy the rattle cans that everybody sees. But like in Canada, the cans are almost like $10 a pop. So you might get maybe one play field out of a can, and all of a sudden they'll go foamy when you're trying to spray it. So I got away from that and I use a regular spray gun. Because like the volume I'm starting to use is a little more, and I find the results are a little better using a gun myself. So it's 2 coats of varathane just on the bare wood. What that does is it allows the wood not to absorb any UV ink, or if you're silk screening them, like the silk screening method, because like that wood is porous, it'll just suck it in. So it's 2 coats of water-based varathane to start. The playfield gets masked with the masking material to get the white layer down to pop the colors, because the old technology on CMYK printers is that they do not lay white down. The new printers, the last 2 years, they will actually lay the white down for you. So I could skip that process next year if my printer goes with a high-end new printer. So what would happen is, for my printer, after I do 2 coats of varathane and mount it to half-inch MDF to keep the playfield flat, it would go into the printer. There's usually a brake guide inside, so they can get a 90-degree angle on the piece of wood going in as a reference point. A lot of the printers have cameras in them for alignment too to try and get a reference point. So hopefully next year what happens is they just slide the play field in, it registers the play field, then it lays down the layer white. So if you've got an inkjet printer at home, you see it going back and forth, back and forth. Picture the commercial ones are like 4 feet across, so the head will travel 4 feet across, and there's numerous inkjets for each color. So what would happen, it would lay the layer of white first. It's curing with the UV bulbs at the same time. So once it runs the white, it could come back and run the CMYK colors, hit it with the curing bulbs at the same time, and then it could actually, if it's a clear coating machine also, it could actually lock in the ink with a layer of clear. And that would speed up the process. So just getting back to your question, I'll just say it's 2 coats of varathane first, 2 coats after I mask for white, 4 coats after it comes back from UV printing, and then it's a further three automotive finish clear coats at the end of the process, so it's like 12 coats.
So I'm just curious, how did you determine that paraffin was a suitable material to print on? Did you print your different options of, like, what is the vehicle to stick to? Because just intuitively, I would not have imagined that that would work, but obviously
it does. It does. The printer, from the early days, what would happen, I think this is called Corplast. It's like a plastic core board or cardboard material for the printing industry. So if you see your real estate signs, political elections, all that stuff, they're predominantly using this type of material to print signs on in the business. So what he initially did was give me some crap stuff that there was a reject or whatever, and I would take it home and spray different types of urethane or clear onto it and see what would happen. So if it didn't start running the ink or bubbling the ink, then it was probably good to go. So it was mainly trial and error. Varathane is very readily available. It was like probably the safest thing and still the safest thing in with all the new environmental guidelines. Like a lot of the automotive stuff is very harsh to the environment or harsh to people using. So the industry is slowly going water-based everything. So I think within the next few years, you'll see most of the developed world go from like a harsh solvent base to a more water-based friendly type of product. Another question? That's part of my problem. I have no artistic talent, never did. I rely on people that have the knowledge. So there are cruise scanners around the world. So a lot of people are using a cruise scanner to scan in like an NOS play field, and they'll use that as a reference point to make a base art file. But like a lot of NOS play fields that are out there, they're NOS for a reason. There was like faults either when they ran through. I've had valley play fields where it's an NOS play field and there's no clear coating on it. If you look closely, you might find where there's like blemishes on the play field, or sometimes they'd use plywood and there'd be like a crack at the top side running down the plywood. It does happen today with new plywood, so you have to be cautious about it. Does that answer your question? The question was about scanning play fields. I've got one of the older Hewlett-Packard clear acrylic ones where you can lay it on and you're supposed to stitch together. I had no luck doing this. I don't know if it was just crappy software on the one I bought, but like a lot of people are using scanners, either ones where they remove the cover and flip it upside down, or they're using the Hewlett-Packard, I think it's the ScanJet 460 or something model. They're still out there, but like what people are doing is the people with talent, like either Photoshop or whatever, they're stitching it together and then cleaning up the files. The printing technology that we're using is still good. About 300 DPI is like the highest resolution we need at this time. Art files are increasing, but so far, like for the machine we've got, 300 is pretty good. It might move up to maybe 600 dots DPI or 1200 with a newer machine. But my printer has been in the business probably 25, 30 years, started off in the silk screening side of it. And he's got a wide knowledge. He's probably like one of the premier printers in my city. And he told me right from the get-go, most people cannot tell the difference at 300 DPI. When you go like 1200, 2400, whatever, the eye really can't decipher what's going on. I'll take a question from Dave Fix at the front. What David just said is like a lot of times people will just take a play field to a print shop and pay $100, $150 just to have it scanned in one pass. They'll usually give you like a CD disc with what they scanned, and then people will take that file and start correcting it to clean it all up. Question at the back. Yeah, the response or the question was, if you take just a home scanner and you remove the glass, flip it upside down, you won't get the scanning resolution, whereas if you use like a scan jet or take it into a shop that has the proper equipment. So other days in the past, what some shops would do is they'd have like a camera on a tripod and they would lay the play field down. It'd be just like enlarging a photograph or whatever, and they would have it fixed up and they would take a picture of that and you could use that. It would scan it digitally. The original, it was called a ScanJet 9840 UV printer, which Hewlett-Packard back about 4 years ago swallowed up because they saw the technology there. So there's lots of high-end printers out there. I would take it that most brand new printers that will be able to do white and the other stuff for large materials, which is like a 4x8 sheet of either coroplast or plywood or whatever, I would take it in Canada. Like that machine is still going to be like anywhere from $250,000 to maybe $500,000. So what my printer does, he has a multi-year lease, so the color span is at the end of its lease in the new year. So I'm hoping he's just going to say, kick that machine away, and we move to the next generation of UV ink printers. Yeah, Martin's question was my failure using UV ink to reproduce back glasses. He was saying maybe there you could put a layer of clear to stabilize or make it a more durable surface. In the past, a lot of hobbyists, myself included, used to put Varathane on like Bally back glasses to protect them. It's a controversial thing where some people say, no, you should never do that. If it's in real cold weather, it might flake off in chunks. I personally have done it on back glasses, and I think it's a far superior thing to do on the older glasses. That's given that the ink is still stable on the original glass. So that would be like your early Bally Electronic glasses that were using a four-color process. I've done it in the past, had great results. What it does is gives it another added layer of protection. I was thinking about like what Martin was saying, going back to the UV side and doing a bunch of stuff, but I think cost-wise, it's still a lot cheaper for very low production runs to go with the traditional silk screening general purpose ink that's used. It's a proven product. I would love to jump forward and use UV technology, but like I've been thinking what Martin said about doing like Varathane, spraying Varathane masking out windows and then coming back and doing the process. And when you crunch the numbers with the cost of the printing and stuff, it just doesn't make sense. You're better off staying old school on the back glasses at this time. The question was with the CMYK printer. With back glasses, usually there's a white diffusing layer applied after the ink, and then you'd have a blocking layer. And David was asking, is there a problem doing that? I would say the answer is yes. In the past, the printer was very reluctant to rerun anything through a UV printer with the old technology. Now that you've got new inkjet printers that actually lay the white down, comes back and does CMYK color, and then comes back again and can do a clear coating process, I would say the answer is anything is possible now with the printer. But back a number of years, it was like, no. But getting back to the cost-wise, usually when you're going to a printer, everything's based on square foot. So your printing job is like square feet. So what I found when I did testing with the UV ink process is I could use the CMYK to do it once, but when I took it to another UV printer with a dryer, I actually found it would have to be hit three or four layers of white to get that proper thickness. UV ink is very, very thin. So in the playfield side, UV ink, very, very thin. The end result is you don't know. It's not distinguishable. It looks just like silk screening playfields, the process I've done here. There might be slightly differences in dithering and specific colors, because when you're silk screening play fields, you have the luxury of pulling out the exact color match you want. You can tint the ink to the exact color you want, and hopefully if you're using the same can or the same technique, all the colors stay the same. But when you start doing different batches, that's where we get the different variations in the past, play fields that are out there. So one could be a certain color pink, but there could be six different colors of pink during the run, because it's like whoever's mixing up the ink of that day and time that they're doing the screening. Question over here. I find the Varathane water-based gloss, like, I find it works for me. I actually, there was a special, I think it was called Clear Shield. It's specially made for UV ink for the sign industry. I had a can of that, and I found that stuff was more aggressive, and it would actually chew on the ink, so I just walked away from it. All this testing and all this proving, and like hobbyists have been using water-based Varathane Clear for many, many years, way back when doing playfield touch-ups and repairs, that it's a proven product. In Canada, the label has changed over the years. I find it's still the same milky clear or milky looking product that we've always gotten. It's still the same look, the same results. You spray it on, if you spray it on heavy, it's gonna look like milk poured on a play field. You shouldn't really go that far, because like, I had one guy over using my stuff and he went crazy with a Xenon play field repair, and he got saggy runs all over the thing because like, he just stayed there forever gunning this thing. So like I say, in my process, it's very light coats. I go back across the play field in my tiny booth, and I go across, back the lengthwise again and across. I rack it and let it dry, and either the next day or days from now, I'll go back through the clearing process. One thing I've found, just for your information, is that when you use water-based Varathane gloss, it doesn't matter if you go back the next day, the next week, 3 months from now, you don't have to sand it. It will adhere and bond to it itself. So that's one thing that's kind of controversial. You'll hear everyone saying, every time I clear, I got to go back and sand a flat or this or that. It's crap. I don't do it. It's a waste of time. But like lots of people do it. So like I say, if you do the finished results, and like I've proven, the Varathane will lock in the UV ink. And if you wait like a week after your final clear coat and take it to an auto body shop, as long as they only do one coat per day, you should be able to probably use any like solvent-based clear on that play field. The problem is you go to body shops and the guys are in a hurry. It's the end of the day. I got stuff in my gun. I want to use it. I'm a cheap ass bastard. I want to get this done now. And they'll spray it, and then they won't even wait for it to cure. They'll hit it again. So you could have two coats of clear within like 15 minutes or half an hour. And even with the Varathane or anything you've done, it'll be so aggressive trying to off-gas that solvent-based clear. That's where you'll run into problems. Usually with the black, it'll make like little curdle lines. So it's like squiggly curlies in the clear, and that's where I had numerous failures from three different shops not listening to me and doing it rush, doing it their way and blaming everybody else at the end of the results. Question? The question was testing different types of Varathane, like whether it's like the flat mat or whatever other varieties they have. I think the only thing I tested in the past was like the Varathane colors. So I'd use like white in a can. I test that, but it was so outrageously priced, I just said, forget it. So actually what I do in my process, like for the high gloss white, I just use the rattle can. So it's Sherwin-Williams auto acrylic white. And when I go and buy it by the case of six, the discounted dealer price is, I think, I can't remember if it's like low $3 or like $4. It's pretty damn cheap. I get two play fields out using a rattle can. The nozzles are usually pretty good, so you're not getting any drips, and it doesn't foam like the cans of Varathane will foam up. But like I've had guys use the oil-based Varathane, I don't go that way. I think if you're doing touch-ups and you're just doing yourself, you'd probably be able to get away with the oil-based Varathane, but I find the water-based is the way to go. Questions? It's called auto acrylic white. So I would take it any auto acrylic, so it's an acrylic product, And I find it works well with Varathane. There's absolutely no problems. And like I say, after it gets auto acrylic white, the next day I'll peel off the masking, or the next 2 days. So I just take an X-Acto knife. You just get under, there'll be like a little dry ridge. The masking will be down, but you can see the outline. So you just get a little tiny X-Acto knife underneath. I use like a stainless steel blade from when I was doing vinyl films for back glasses. So I use whatever that brand is. It's like $10 for a little X-Acto knife that you can change out the blades. Comes like 50 in a pack or something for replacing blades. But I find if I just gently get underneath the masking, as soon as I get that, I grab it with my fingertips, my thumb and my finger, and I just peel it away. And what I do is I just keep moving along and sticking them to each other, and you just have a ball of masking crap, and then after it gets too big, I just throw it in the garbage and keep peeling away. But I give it about half a day to a day to cure, because when you lift the masking, it still might be curing on the edge around the light lenses. So, but like in Canada, we buy a lot of stuff from China. We ship them a lot of stuff, and we buy a lot of finished commercial or consumer products from China. So in Canada, I actually bought a vinyl plotter cutter, and you can buy it with software for about $1,000. But like, being not too much techno savvy with CAD programs or vector graphics, usually it's cheaper for me just to go out to another sign shop that specializes in vinyl graphics or vinyl cutting. I pay them $65 an hour. The technicians there, they know exactly how to pick circles or arrows, William arrows or Bally arrows or whatever, cut and paste it so that I'm maximizing out my vinyl. And like, I just walk away, like what they can do in like half an hour by somebody with a skill set, it would probably take me 20 to 50 hours pulling my hair out of my head. So that machine just sits there gathering dust for the most part. Any other questions? It's called Oracal 810. So it's O-R-A-C-A-L, I believe, 810. Oracal sells a lot of different vinyl materials to the graphics industry, whether it's the printing industry or the graphics industry. So I think it's like a German-based company, but like it's readily available just about everywhere. But I find this masking is really good, that it's super thin. Yeah, it's got a great color, so when you're putting it on the play field, usually you can distinguish that you've actually put it down. Dave. The question from Dave Fix was, have I ever been thinking about doing the electromechanical games where there's nothing really available unless somebody's got a stash of play fields? For some bizarre reason, it seems like a lot of old Gottlieb play fields are flooding the eBay markets. I don't know why. It might be that, you know, I keep talking about, I do have a relationship with Bob Fezzian and Steve Young. They still have the door open, so probably next year I will be doing brand new play fields as a test for them. If it passes the hurdle, then that will open up for very small production runs of either Gottlieb electronic pins or the old EMs. The business model that I can get into, being in the same city as Classic Playfield Reproductions, I see what they're up to. They know exactly what I'm up to. I do visit them. I do subcontract work for them lately in the past on playfields, which people don't realize is that I am starting up with some other people gluing insert light lenses into a CNC playfields. So some people will be fortunate to get the 30 cyclones that went through my shop. I've got the first batch of Pinbot play fields to start gluing, which I've already started. But like, if somebody gets one of their play fields, what I do as an ID thing, if you look down the left side top of the play field on the side, if you see a circle Sharpie, just a dot, then you'll know that's one of my play fields that I was subcontracted just to glue the light lenses. Anybody who got an 8-ball play field way back, I think I did 20 or 30 of them, and initially what I would do is a J, a fish jay on the side of the play field. And all that's to do is just to distinguish what play fields are coming through my shop for quality control, and the CPR contractors or their staff, they do nothing. Like, there's no mark, so it just differentiates if I'm screwing up their play fields, they can say, that's the guy who fucked up their play fields. But like, it's great. A lot of times I get there's talk out in the industry. I continue to hear it about inkjet technology. Like, I wish people, my buddies there, would stop saying it. I don't trash their product. I expect them not to trash my process. The industry is going towards inkjet technology, so like, that's where it's going. I don't know why you would keep bringing up that like my process is crap. The results are there. Unfortunately, all the play fields I keep doing, for some bizarre reason, people don't want abuse on RGP or other places. In all the play fields I keep going out, there's absolutely no talk about them. Like, one play field went to Craig Hassel in Texas, and there was no word about it at all. Edward had his play field. It took him months before he said anything. So the technology is out there. My process in the future, like I say, there's CNC play fields. So my vinyl shop that does my vinyl cutting actually bought a brand new CNC table that will actually do, I'm guessing it's either 10 or 12 feet long by 4 feet. That's how huge this table is. It's a monster. So they're in it for mainly carving out signage. So in the sign industry today, when you go out there, you can see either flat, like plywood signs or wood signs, but a lot of stuff's going towards this film industry, foam molding board or whatever you want to call it. It's like, the styrofoam is like hundreds of dollars for a big piece of it, and they'll just machine it, and then once they spray it, it looks fabulous. It's like a 3D molding process. So I have access to this play field. The guy who owns it knows he's got 60 grand tied up in a CNC table, so like, he knows he wants to start doing either play fields or other products as a subcontractor. So I have a source there. The guys at CPR, they're still running with one table. They have another table they already bought like 4 months ago. They're just waiting for the space to get it going. So the CPR guys, they're going flat out. They hope to start producing a lot more play fields than they've done in the past, which I think they can if they subcontract out some more work and just focus on CNCing play fields and just doing the finish stuff. So on that note, I guess I'll wrap it up. And thanks, everybody, for coming out. So just one final note. My website, greatpinball.com, has been down for months. It should be finally starting up. So I am a new Stern dealer, so there'll be a focus on new Stern gains for Canada, for my area of the market. But I will also, starting pretty soon, I'll start putting up pages where you can actually see the process and the techniques and what I'm up to, and hopefully people can learn from that. Thanks a lot.